Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. More formalities are being taken care of today as the Carter administration moves toward requesting a Taft-Hartley injunction against the nationwide coal strike. The walkout now is 94 days old. Barry Serafin reports from Washington.
The three-member fact-finding panel, which held hearings on the coal dispute yesterday, is expected to present its formal report to President Carter before noon today. There's little doubt about what the report will say. The chairman of the panel, lawyer John Gentry, says the situation adds up to deep divisions based on widely varying concerns. In other words, an impasse. This afternoon, the administration plans to go into federal district court here in Washington to ask that miners be ordered back to work. The government is expected to ask initially for a temporary restraining order against the strike and follow that up within a few days with a request for a formal Taft-Hartley injunction. The question that remains is how many miners would obey a back-to-work order. Many are still calling for a federal takeover of the mines, a move opposed by coal operators. The administration is trying to discourage speculation about seizure of the mines, but officials acknowledge that that has not been entirely ruled out if the Taft-Hartley Act does not work. Barry Serafin, CBS News, Washington.
West Virginia's Governor Jay Rockefeller today is expected to announce a series of severe statewide cutbacks in an effort to ease the energy crisis caused by the coal strike. Bruce Hall has details in Charleston.
Rockefeller is considering shortening the work week, laying off 10 to 15% of state employees, and closing down the university system until coal production resumes. Last month, Rockefeller stopped all hirings, pay raises, and purchases of equipment, but the economic picture is getting worse. In the coal communities of the state, retail sales are reported to be off by 50%. Statewide unemployment has reached 17%, and officials say it may climb to 25%. The conditions were not helped yesterday when two of the state's largest power companies began a 30% curtailment, which is expected to bring about another 20 to 25,000 job layoffs in a state that already has 50,000 coal miners out of work. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Charleston, West Virginia.
Energy Secretary James Schlesinger has warned that if the coal strike doesn't end soon, at least 3.5 million people will be laid off by the end of April. The Soviet Union today handed the Geneva Disarmament Conference a draft treaty to ban neutron bombs. The draft was co-sponsored by seven other communist nations and was immediately denounced by the United States, which called it a one-sided propaganda exercise. President Carter holds a news conference this afternoon. It will be broadcast on many of the CBS radio network stations at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint suggests that from the president's point of view, it doesn't come at a particularly felicitous moment.
This is one of those weeks when some reporter should ask Mr. Carter how he enjoys his job nowadays. The president could point out that Sunday, the United Mine Workers rejected a contract which he had very much wanted them to accept, forcing him to invoke the Taft-Hartley law. No one inside or outside the White House knows where that will lead, but the chief worry here is that it will not lead the miners back to producing coal. Then on Tuesday, Senator Russell Long came into the Oval Office to tell the president that his chances of getting his equalization tax on old oil, a key part of his energy program, those chances range from slim to none. Today, the president meets with Massachusetts Senator Edward Brook to try to persuade Brook to vote yes on the Panama Canal treaties, but Brook has made it clear he is moving toward a firm no. Brook was considered crucial to the president's need for getting 67 yes treaty votes in the Senate. And finally, the president's chief liaison with the American Jewish community, Mark Siegel, has declared he can no longer support Mr. Carter's Mideast policy, less than a week before Israeli Prime Minister Begin arrives for Mideast talks. Mr. Carter may be somewhat testy today on the subject of how he likes his job. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, at the White House.
On the Panama Canal treaties, this is another day of Senate debate, and Neil Strozer reports the way it's going.
Today, the Senate moves on to Article 4 of the Canal Neutrality Treaty, and the first of the two leadership amendments, which together incorporate the Carter-Torrijos understanding to clarify the U.S. right to defend the canal after U.S. bases are closed and the canal turned over in the year 2000, and its right to send its ships to the head of the line in time of war. Those two amendments were thought necessary to win the support for passage of the treaties. But with a final vote on the neutrality treaty no more than 8 days away, the no's count is still short of the necessary two-thirds majority. Two more of the undecideds moved toward the leaning against category yesterday, and the balance may now rest with several Democrats who are reported pressing the leadership to agree to a further concession. They want an amendment, preferably, or an understanding,
that would allow the U.S. to negotiate with Panama to keep at least one military base after 1999. They claimed some progress yesterday in meetings with Democratic leader Robert Byrd. He refused to comment. Neil Strauser, CBS News, the U.S. Senate.
The Labor Department reports that wholesale prices rose 1.1% in February, their largest monthly gain in more than 3 years. Food prices were up 2.9%. These latest wholesale increases are sure to be reflected in retail prices later on. Israeli Defense Minister Ezer Weitzman, after spending yesterday at the Pentagon, today takes his case to Capitol Hill. We'll hear about it from CBS News Pentagon correspondent Ike Pappas.
Weissman will spend the morning briefing members of the House Armed Services Committee on Israel's plan to purchase some $13.5 billion worth of arms and equipment over the next 10 years. The plan, codenamed Matmon, or Hidden Treasure in Hebrew, calls for the purchase of 150 more F-16 fighter aircraft and 50 more technically advanced F-15 fighter bombers. The Israelis also want up to 6,000 more armored personnel carriers and several advanced ground and naval weapons. Whether Congress will agree to sell the Israelis all of that is another matter. In his talks yesterday at the Pentagon with Defense Secretary Harold Brown, Weissman argued against the proposed sale of advanced aircraft to Egypt and Saudi Arabia, saying the sale poses a direct threat to Israel. Brown reportedly replied that if Israel wants the F-15s it is asking for, Congress will have to also agree to the sale of the fighter aircraft that the Arabs are asking for. The deal is a three-nation package, said Brown, and cannot be broken. Ike Pappas, CBS News, Washington.
In an interview with James Reston of the New York Times, Egyptian President Sadat says he thinks the time has come for President Carter to state his terms for breaking the diplomatic stalemate in the Middle East. Sadat believes that the United States should, as he puts it, risk its responsibility as a partner, not a mediator, in the peace negotiations. Yugoslavia's President Tito, interviewed yesterday by CBS News correspondent Walter Cronkite, said he thinks the Middle East situation now is worse than it ever was, and he doesn't know what lies ahead. Another case of air piracy occurred today, this time near Hong Kong. It failed. Barry Kalb has details.
A government spokesman said the plane was only a few miles out of Hong Kong when the plane's flight engineer attacked the pilot and co-pilot with a hammer and scissors. The pilot called for help on the plane's intercom, the spokesman said, and the airline security guard on board rushed forward. The spokesman said the security guard shot the flight engineer and killed him. Somehow, the pilot and co-pilot were also injured, but it's not known if they were shot or injured by the hammer and scissors. There's also no definite word at the moment on where the flight engineer wanted to go, or if, in fact, he was hijacking the plane. It's only known that the plane suddenly veered north towards the China coast, then turned back and landed in Hong Kong. Barry Kalb, CBS News, at Hong Kong's Kai Tak International Airport.
With rigid security in force and several thousand police on hand, a group of Italian terrorists went on trial today in Turin. Bert Quint is on the scene.
There was little question about the guilt of the 14 men and one woman in custody here. They proudly claimed membership in an organization dedicated to the overthrow of the government by violence. And as the trial was about to begin, one of the defendants read a statement for all, saying the Red Brigades were engaged in a civil war. But twice in the past, here in Turin and once in Milan, assassinations and threats that persons connected with the trial would be killed blocked the course of justice. This time, too, the issue was in doubt until the last minute. More than 100 prospective jurors had refused to serve. Some claimed economic hardship if they stayed away from work. Some claimed illness, but the principal reason was fear. The law requires 6 regular jurors and up to 10 reserves. The 6 regulars were assured, but in the face of likely defections, the judge wanted all 10 reserves. He didn't get them, but in this morning's selection of prospective jurors, he did get 8, enough to start with. Bert Quinn, CBS News, Turin.
Diplomatic sources in Nairobi, Kenya, say Somali rebel forces in the Ogaden Desert conflict appear to have been shattered by Ethiopian troops supported by Soviet and Cuban units. They say no Somali resistance remains in the northern Ogaden.